Franz Kafka's novel The Trial delivered us into a hellish world of mind control and powerlessness where the individual is a criminal and to stand out is to invite imprisonment and death. Today, while much of the corporate speak of branding and social values can sometimes be seen as another form of totalitarianism, if you blink, it can also be seen as a kind of emerging alternative ethos. Listen to this. Steve Martin. Is it comedy or philosophy?
I was swimming this morning with the dolphins in Costa Rica, and I realized something. I am a great man. And great men do great things. I want to open a flagship store right here in Philadelphia. I want it to be the biggest store we ever built. I want it to be made of 100% recyclable materials. And I want it to be so beautiful that people want to get married in it.
If I told you it's from the Tina Fey movie Baby Mama, you would say, well, of course, satire. But if you just listen to it literally, it sounds plausible. An epiphany with dolphins, a store dedicated to values, like a cathedral. Tom McCarthy's mind-blowing new novel, Satin Island, explores this eerie ambiguity. It centers around a corporate anthropologist named Yu, kind of like Joseph K. from Kafka, whose job is to write the Great Report, the truth of our age, written in a glassed-in office cubicle. McCarthy is interested in a modern notion of Kafka, with all the snarky satire and cynicism completely removed.
I'm kind of interested in the migration over time of a certain way of thinking. So in the 1920s, the artist Salvador Dali coins this term, the paranoiac critical technique, which is, you know, you take all these completely unconnected things, make connections between them, and you produce new artworks, but also new cultural insights, new bodies of knowledge. That's in the 20s. Then in the 50s and 60s, this technique is adopted by the situationists as part of this kind of revolutionary critique of capitalism. And then by now, it's almost come 180 degrees round, and it's become the driving logic of the corporate think tank, the brainstorming session, and so on. And I find these migrations kind of interesting.
You know, I wanted to play a little bit with this idea of the airport that goes all the way through through this book. You begin this book in the Turin airport, which is kind of random, and you talk about the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico that all of us remember, the BP.
Do you know what? Actually, while I was – sorry to interrupt, but I was writing that section just before that oil spill happened.
You
bizarrely.
Are kidding.
No, I mean, that's the thing. It's almost like the car crash for Ballard. The oil spill is a perpetual event. There's always an oil spill that's either just happened or is happening, or we can safely say that is about to happen, that's only a month away, that's going to make the last one look small. I mean,
but
that's this kind of ongoing catastrophe.
You wrote with such detail about this oil gushing underneath the surface, and you must have felt a little supernatural when that thing happened as you were finishing this writing.
Yeah, it's kind of uncanny. William Burroughs used to think he was actually making plane crashes happen by doing his cut-ups. But then he'd I think he'd taken a lot more drugs than I have.
Well, the fact becomes fiction, the fiction becomes fact, and the imagined truth becomes truth. I guess that's part of a theme in this book, so it makes perfect sense that you would predict the future.
I guess the book's very much about, I mean, kind of about feedback loops and being in systems of information, of writing and reading and archiving and interpreting and then putting back these fictions into the world, which is made of so many fictions already. And, absolutely, the character, the hero or anti-hero, is just this kind of node in front of this giant feedback network of catastrophe and spectacle, which is, you know, modern culture.
And the Great Report. Have you ever been assigned a Great Report, an assignment that was supposed to be absolutely definitive, that you determined as you got into it could, in fact, never be really completed?
Well, I think this is what we writers do every time we sit down to write the next book. I mean, there were two things I was kind of riffing off there. One was Bronislaw Malinowski's, the father of modern anthropology, his first commandment, which is simply write everything down. Everything must become text. That's what an anthropologist does. So the anthropologist is kind of a writer. The other thing I was thinking about was Mallarmé, the father of modern literature. Mm-hmm. his notion of the book to come. Everything in the world that exists, exists in order to end up in, or as, a book. And this all-consuming book would be so absolute that it would break the book as we know it apart. It would be a multimedia, multi-platform kind of non-object, expanded object. So, I mean, he's writing this in the late 19th century, but it perfectly anticipates digital culture. And so I'm very interested in this idea of omnidata, of the book to come. And in the 21st century, you know, this book is effectively written by software. I mean, we have the very fact of having a phone in our pocket means that every single position we occupy during the day, every keystroke we make on the laptop and so on, it's all archived, it's all written down. Our networks of kinship are being mapped by software on Facebook and Amazon. So this really raises a provocative question about, well, what's the writer there for, you know?
Exactly. Is there craft or is it purely archiving? I mean, I think one of the great insights in this book is that, you know, people have acquired fiction and storytelling as a unit of measure. And it reminds me of in the 90s, you know, people would start talking about, you know, everything's a story, man, and what we do is stories. And, you know, then advertisers became storytellers. And then, you know, what is the message of the candidate? Candidates became storytellers. We're all storytellers. And I'm wondering if that is a conscious working out of this literary evolution that you described that really comes from the 19th century, or is it just
Absolutely.
This has been predicted and it's not something that's just been appropriated by people who don't have anything else to say?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Western literature more or less begins in Aeschylus's Oresteia, 458 BC, with an account of a signal crossing space. The first 3-4 pages of that play consist of Clytemnestra not so much telling us that Troy has fallen, but describing to us in great detail the nodes and relays of the signal beacon network covering all of Greece, through which we know the news that Troy has fallen. It's about being immersed in a regime of transmission, of technological transmission. And this is, you know, this carries all the way through to, I mean, when we look at Hamlet now, especially in the wake of Edward Snowden's recent revelations, it's very hard not to see it as a play about surveillance, about, you know, the state scanning of private correspondence, data encryption, and so forth. So I think this is something that has been implicit in Western literature right from the off.
The Cold War gave us Orwell, and although they don't quite go together, one sort of predicts the other, but the 20th century was all about this big brother, this construct of the government as all-powerful, and Kafka's human being all weak. There's something reassuring about the extent to which you're all just kind of moving through the same world of story sharing and data sharing, and there's just something a little more benign about this than Orwell's 1984.
Yeah, I mean, between you and me and your listeners, I think Orwell is a total lightweight as a writer. Kafka, on the other hand, is a monumental genius. And as you say, he is very much anticipating the kind of bureaucratic structures of the Cold War, also of corporate culture, and of, you know, our current whatever neoliberal capitalism, whatever you want to call it, and I kept thinking about Kafka while I wrote this book, and there is a kind of sense that everyone is just mapping this giant infrastructure that is ultimately unmappable, you know. But they're like Theseus; they're just working their way through these labyrinths with little bits of string and getting it all tangled up, and so on. And there's an immense pleasure to that. As you say, it's not all about terror, although it is dark. But I think there's a lot of joy to that process as well.
Tom McCarthy is the author most recently of Staten Island. He's also General Secretary of the International Necronautical Society, a semi-fictitious avant-garde network.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.